So a reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, the event of Lord Krishna introduction. We're on the last verse of this chapter, 10th canto, chapter 1, text 69. Ugra senam cha pitaram. Yadu bojandaka dipam. Swayam nigriya bhubhuje. Shurasena mahabalaha. Somebody could chant. Majesties. Okay, word for word. Ugrasenam. Unto Ugrasena. Cha. And. Pitaram. One who has his own father. Yadu. Of the Yadu dynasty. Bhoja. Of the Bhoja dynasty. Andaka, of the Andaka dynasty. Adipam, the king. Swayam, personality. Nigriya, subduing. Bhubhuje, enjoyed. Shurasenam, all the states known as Shurasena. Mahabalaha, the extremely powerful Kamsa. Translation. Kamsa, the most powerful son of Ugrasena, even imprisoned his own father, the king of the Yadu, Bhoja, and Andaka dynasties, and personally ruled the states known as Shurasena. Purport. The state known as Mathura was also included within the states known as Surasena. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, so this, since this is a very short purport, I'm going to start reading from the additional notes to this chapter. So I'm just going to read a few of the notes because they're over 14 pages long. So I'll read about a page or so of them. Additional notes for this chapter. Regarding transmigration of the soul, Srila Madhvacharya gives the following notes. When one is awake, whatever one sees or hears is impressed upon the mind, which later works in dreams to show one different experiences. Although in dreams one appears to accept a different body. For example, when one is awake, one does business and talks with customers. And similarly, in dreams, one meets various customers, talks about business, and gives quotations. Madhvacharya says, therefore, that dreams take place according to what one sees, hears, and remembers. When one reawakens, of course, one forgets the body of the dream. This forgetfulness is called apasmriti. Thus, we are changing bodies because we are sometimes dreaming, sometimes awake, and sometimes forgetful. Forgetfulness of our previously created bodies is called death, and our work in the present body is called life. After death, one cannot remember the activities of one previous body, whether imaginary or factual. The agitated mind is compared to agitated water reflecting the sun and the moon. Actually, the sun and moon reflected on the water do not exist there. Nonetheless, they are reflected according to the movements of the water. Similarly, when our minds are agitated, we wander in different material atmospheres and receive different types of bodies. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita as guna sangha. Karmana guna sangoshma. Madhvacharya says, guna nu Bada san. And Sri Titanya Mahabhubhu says, Brahmanya Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev. This is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjalila 19.151. The living entity rotates up and down throughout the universe, sometimes in the upper planetary system, sometimes in the middle and lower planetary systems, sometimes as a man, sometimes a god, a dog, a tree, and so on. This is all due to the agitation of the mind. The mind must therefore be steadily fixed, as it is said, Savai Mana Krishna Pararavindayo. One should fix one's mind to the lotus feet of Krishna, and then will become free from agitation. This is the instruction of the Garuda Purana and the Naradiya Purana. The same process is described. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan, the agitated mind goes to different planetary systems because it is attracted to different kinds of demigods. But one does not go to the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by worshipping the demigods, for this is not supported by any Vedic literature. Man is the architect of his own fortune. In this human life, one has the facility with which to understand one's real situation, and one can decide whether to wander around the universe forever or return home back to Godhead. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Apraptya mam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. There is no such thing as chance. When a tree is burning in a forest fire, and although the nearest tree is spared, a distant tree catches fire. This may appear to be chance. Similarly, one may seem to get different types of bodies by chance, but actually one receives these bodies because of the mind. The mind flickers between accepting and rejecting, and according to the acceptance and rejection of the mind, we receive different types of bodies. Although we superficially seem to attain these bodies by chance, even if we accept the theory of chance, the immediate cause for the change in body is the agitation of the mind. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Bhastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Vaskachate Shatarne. So in this, Srila Prabhupada mentions here in the notes of the chapter, different items such as the transmigration of the soul, the agitated mind, dreams, and chants. So the transmigration of the soul is constantly going on. Just like we change these bodies, we have a little body, baby's body, and then a youthful body, and an old man's body. As Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, Dehi no sminyata dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dehantara pratir diras tata namuryati. So, as the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So for the ordinary man, this verse is very difficult to understand. Therefore, Krishna says, Dhiras tata namuryati. Only a sober person can understand this. So we are eternal. Even though we're situated in this temporary body, we are eternal. As Krishna says previously to this, he says, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So the soul is simply going through these different changes. Kaumaram, this childhood, which is up to the age of 15 years. And then youthfulhood is to 16 to 40 or 50 years. And then jara or old age, which is from 40 to 50, like that, going up. So in these different types of bodies that one receives, this is simply an outward covering. Just like a dress. We have so many dresses we change within our life. We have childhood dress. We have family and friends and youthful life. So we have a certain type of dress. And as she will probably mention this connection, in old age, I'm a mendicant and I have a certain type of dress. So even though we're changing all these dresses, doesn't mean I'm dead and gone. I continue. I'm eternal. And even if we forget, what we were in our previous life, forgetfulness does not mean that we did not exist. Just like a child. A child may not forget so many things it did in his childhood, but the parents, they understand. They understand that he did so many things. So in this way, we're transmigrating from one species of life to another according to our mentality. So if we have the mentality of a dog, then Yamaraj puts us into a dog's body. And then in that childlike situation, because an animal is like a child, its consciousness is not developed. So in that situation, Mother Nature takes care of us. and brings us up to youthful life, to the human form of life, after we've been corrected and gone through our term of imprisonment. And in this way, we can decide where we want to go. We could either go home, back to Godhead, or stay in this material world. And if we act like cats and dogs, then we'll become a cat or a dog. So we have this knowledge. We have these books. So if we take advantage of them, then our life will be successful. Otherwise, we'll simply go down again into the other forms of life, lower forms of life. So we have to know this knowledge. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not come again to this material world, but attains my eternal abode, Arjuna. So, like that. So once one falls in the lower species of life, automatically they rise up to the human form of life, because for an animal, there's no karma. They cannot commit any sinful activities. Just like a child, if a child steals something, then he's not held criminal. Or if a dog goes on the wrong side of the street, it's not considered a criminal activity. But if an adult does that activity, then he's charged, criminally charged. So we're very much responsible. We have the responsibility in this human form of life, so we could decide what we want to do. So it's explained that this life is like a dream, how everything, a material, is like a dream because it has no permanent existence. It has no factual relationship to the soul. Just like at night we may be dreaming that we're flying through the sky, or I'm on a chariot as a king. But when we awaken, none of these things are actually existing. So this is simply a dreamlike state. And because we manufacture so many things within our minds, so many mental concoctions. They may be factual, or they may just be simply imaginary. Just like Srila Prabhupada gives the example of gold. And during the daytime, we may see gold, and we may see a mountain. So at night, we may dream of a golden mountain, although such a thing may never actually exist. But sometimes also, when we dream, just like Prabhupada gives example in the Bhagavatam, we're flying in the sky. So this is an indication that we were either a demigod or an astronaut in our previous life. So this, to remember, it's like it says in the notes of the chapter, when one changes one's body, one forgets everything, whether factual or imaginary. But in certain cases, people actually remember their previous lives. Just like we have the example of King Riga. He became a lizard in his next life, but he could remember that he was a king. And he attributed this to his great desire to see Krishna and his tendency to perform ritualistic and charitable activities. So he could actually remember his life even in the body of a lizard. And Srila Prabhupada mentions in this connection also that in the modern times, we see that sometimes small children, they can remember their previous lives. So he remembered, and we have the example of Bharata Maharaj. Although he accepted the body of a deer, he was able to remember his previous life as a devotee who unfortunately fell down from the practice of devotional service. And in that situation, he was very serious. As a deer, he just ate dry leaves, and he would simply listen to the sages speak about transcendental subject matters. So even in that situation, animal situation, or the child in the womb, is stated that if a child is fortunate, that he remembers the distress of it, while he's in the womb, he remembers the distress of his past 100 births. So, in this, in certain, according to certain circumstances, one can remember these things. And the devotees, once the devotees asked Prabhupada that if we were in the spiritual world, then why don't we remember that? And Srila Prabhupada gave the example of himself. He said, when I'm out of Los Angeles, I forget everything about Los Angeles. I go to India or Europe, and I engage in activities there. But when I come back, I immediately remember everything. So he said, out of sight, out of mind. So by going away from something, the natural tendency is to forget. Forgetfulness. But also it is stated that by becoming associate of the Supreme Lord, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we can actually remember our past lives. Just like the examples given of Narada Muni, how he remembered that in his past life he was the son of a maidservant. So this is possible by Krishna consciousness. So talks about the agitated mind, how we have to control the mind. This is one of the qualifications of a Brahmana. He controls his mind. He controls his senses. He's clean. He's peaceful. So we have to control the mind. The mind could be either a friend or an enemy. If we control the mind, then it's our friend. But if we don't control the mind, it becomes an unconquered enemy. And in that situation, we have to take dictation from the mind, and it will dictation of lust, anger, avarice, illusion, and so many bad qualities. So the mind is the cause of both bondage and liberation. By absorbing our mind in sense gratification, becomes a cause of our bondage. And by becoming detached, it's the cause of our liberation. So in this way, the mind could be taken either way. And to control the mind, we have to engage all the senses in devotional service. And just like Maharaj Ambarish, he controlled his senses. He controlled his mind by engaging all the senses in worshiping the Lord. So in the beginning, it's very difficult to control the mind. To do that, we have to follow the rules and regulations to control the mind, which in the beginning is like poison. It's very bitter poison, bitter medicine. But in the end, it becomes like nectar. This is mentioned in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, as happiness in the mode of goodness. Happiness in this mode of goodness is like poison in the beginning and nectar in the end. Whereas happiness in the mode of passion is like nectar in the beginning, but like poison in the end. So, by Krishna consciousness, we can control the mind. No other process. Other processes are very, very difficult. Just like Vishwamitra Muni, he tried to control his senses, but when Menaka came, he simply heard her ankle bells, and this way he was distracted from his practice of yoga. But by engaging in Krishna consciousness, one can easily control the mind. Although it is very difficult, like Arjuna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, "Oh Krishna, the mind is very difficult. To control the mind, it seems more difficult than controlling the wind." And Krishna says, "Yes, it's very difficult, but it can be done by practice and by detachment." So this practice is engaging in the nine processes of devotional service. The first and foremost is hearing about Krishna, which purges the mind of all misgivings. And this way, by hearing more and more, one can be enlightened and detached, and thus one could focus the mind on Krishna. So one has to control the mind and control the senses, otherwise there's no possibility of attaining the benediction or mercy of the Lord. One has to do this. This is the first principle in yoga practice, is to control the mind and control the senses. So it's mentioned here about chants, how that they say, like the scientists say, for example, there is chance. Actually, there's no chance. Somebody says things are simply done by chance. That means they have imperfect knowledge. They want to be evasive. They don't know. That's what they're saying. So a brahmana will not accept such things from a rascal. A brahmana will not simply accept something because it is said by a rascal. Whereas a sudra, they will accept because they have no intelligence. So this is a distinction between a brahmana and a sudra. Brahmana has intelligence, whereas sudra does not. So we don't simply accept things because some rascal says it. We inquire, what's their logic? What's their authority? And this way, this is how a brahmana understands. So people say, well, if things aren't done by chance, why is there so much evil in the world? We say that, yes, Krishna is all good and everything comes from him. But for our satisfaction, he has given us, he lets us do whatever we want. Therefore, we ourselves have created evil. So in this way, a man is the architect of his own fortune. By using our intelligence, we create either a good situation or a bad situation. So if by our good fortune, if we take advantage of the association of the devotees of the Lord, then we become purified, and thus we get out of the repetition of birth and death. But we could also be create our own misfortune and neglect their association, and this way have to constantly go through the various species of life. So in this material world, we are walking in this material world, which is a place of darkness, because there is danger at every step. Padam bhatam yad vi padam. Every step there is danger. There is danger because it is a place of darkness. This material is naturally a dark place, and because of that there is need of sunshine, moonshine, of fire or electricity. So not only is it dark in that way, in an external way, it's also dark in terms of ignorance. Therefore, the Vedic conjunction is Tamasi Ma, get out of the darkness. Jyotir Gama, go to the light. So Krishna is like the sun. Krishna Surya Sama, and Maya is just like the darkness. So we have to situate Krishna within our brains. We have to he has to be in our mind or our heart, and this way our life will be successful. But if we remain in the darkness, then there will be a danger at every step. So we could overcome this darkness by surrendering unto Krishna. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender unto me. I will give you protection from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. And unless we actually surrender to Krishna, unless we fully surrender unto Krishna, then Maya will never leave us alone. But instead of surrendering to Krishna, we surrender to our wives and to many women. Therefore, we have to rectify or purify our mind. So this is the process of bhakti. This process of bhakti is available by the Association of Devotees. We should understand that there are only two types of people in this world, the demons or the devotees. There's no third class. Either you're a demon or a devotee. If you do not know who is God, then you're a demon. Boss, finished. You may have a PhD or an MA, so many degrees, so many qualifications, but it's simply, it's just like Srila Prabhupada's example of a snake has a jewel on its head. It doesn't mean it's less dangerous. It's still very dangerous. So the material scientists, they have all these degrees, but they're simply demons. They are not creating anything beneficial. Instead, they create things like atom bombs, where just so many bombs could kill millions of people at once. Where formerly you just had a knife and you just, you know, kill a few people, but now, by their so-called advancement, they could kill so many people at one time. So we have to be careful, get good association, and purify our desires. We should not make plans for sense gratification. This is the definition of Maya. Maya means making plans to become happy in this material world. And by these material desires, by having material desires, we have to accept another material body just to fulfill those desires. And as soon as we accept this material world as all in all, then we become fearful. Everybody's fearful. Everybody's fearful of death. Everybody's fearful of disease. Just like this disease situation, people are so much afraid. Therefore, there's so many medical colleges and pharmacies and medicines because people are terrified. They think they're this body. And if this body becomes sick, then I'll have to suffer. So they are very much afraid. And as far as death, people are terrified. And foolishly, some of them try to ignore death or think that they could conquer over death. Even though so many people have died, our grandfather has died, our father has died, and every moment, thousands and millions of living Indians are dying. But we think somehow or another I will escape death. So this is described as the most wonderful thing. The most wonderful thing. But we think that I have my strong soldiers. I have my family, my wife. They will protect me. Just like that one pastime of Satyavan and Savitri. She protected her husband from death. Yamaraj has taken her husband away, and she said she offered him Yamaraj prayers, and he said, "Okay, what do you want?" He says, "I want a child," and he said, "Okay." And then he was still taking her husband away, and she said, "What are you doing?" He says, "Okay, I gave you a benediction." And then she said that, "How could I have a child if my husband is not here?" So he said, "Okay." So in this way, she tricked Yamaraj. But we should not think that my wife is so chaste and so clever that she'll be able to trick Yamaraj and I'll be saved from death. We should not think like that. Or sometimes probably give an example of a fool who thinks that Yamaraj is a gentleman, and a gentleman will not tolerate obnoxious things. So I'll smear my whole body with stool, and then when he comes to get me, he'll see that and he'll go away. So this is we cannot trick Krishna, we cannot trick Yamaraj. Just like Hiranyakasipu, he was thinking he was going to trick death in so many ways. I cannot kill them land, sea, or air, inside or outside, in day or night. But Krishna is more clever than us, and he was able to trick Hiranyakasipu. So ultimately, There's no way out of this material world. Everybody has to perish. Even if one stays throughout the whole duration of the universe, ultimately he has to leave. At the time of cosmic annihilation, the whole thing is burnt to ashes from the fire and sparks emanating from the eyes of Lord Shiva. And so it doesn't matter what planet you're on, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Abharmam Bhuvana Loka Purnaravartino Jamam Upetya Tukontiya Purnajanmam Navidyate. From the highest plane in the material world down to the lowest, all the places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. So the only way of getting out of this material world is to surrender to Krishna by accepting his instructions, by hearing from the spiritual master. And this way we could get on the boat, we accept the boat of his lotus feet, and thus cross over the ocean of birth and death. In this way, our life will be eternal and full of knowledge and full of bliss. So we could stop there. Are there any questions on these points? Yes?
I'm trying to get this to work, but I don't think that is good.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Rabindranath Prabhu, for the nice class. I did want some further clarification on something that you said in terms of either they're devotees or they're demons. Because I have a little bit of a hard time understanding it's black and white. I'm not arguing. I need some further clarification.
Yeah, so anyway, Srila Prabhupada had mentioned this in a lecture, and because of course we know that there's four classes. A devotee sees four things. He sees the devotee, the demon, the innocent, and the Supreme Lord. So one may say, well, where does the innocent fit in there? So the way I see it is that they're like little demons. They're demoniac. But they have a chance by the association of devotees to become rectified. But those who are big demons like the Mayavadis, it's stated that if one becomes an impersonalist or Mayavadi, thinks that one's one with the Supreme Lord and has a great envy or hatred for the Supreme Lord, then he'll have to stay in this material world for millions and millions of years like that. Okay? Any other questions on these points? Okay, thank you very much. All glory to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga.
Don't be a little demon. Come either a devotee or a big demon. Okay?